Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 8. Dhruva Maharaj leaves home. Text 44. Pranayamena Sivritam Pranendriya Mano Malam Shanaya Vyudasya Abhidhyayen Manasa Guruna Gurum. Pranayamena Trivrita Pranendriya Manomalam Shanavyudasya Vidyayen Manasa Guruna Gurum Pranayamena Trivrita Pranendriya Manomalam Shanavyudasya Vidyayen Manasa Guruna Gurum Pranayamena Trivrita Pranendriya Manomalam Shanavyudasya Vidyayen Manasa Guruna Gurum
Pranayamena Trivrita
Pranayamena. By breathing exercises. Trivrita. By the three recommended ways. Prana Indriya. The life, air, and the senses. Mana. Mind. Malam. Impurity. Shanai, gradually. Vyudasya, giving up. Abhidyayet, meditate upon. Manasa, by the mind. Guruna, undisturbed. Gurum, the Supreme Spiritual Master, Krishna. Translation. After sitting on your seat, practice the three kinds of breathing exercises, and thus gradually control the life air, the mind, and the senses. Completely free yourself from all material contamination, and with great patience, begin to meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In this verse, the entire yoga system is described in summary, and special stress is given to the breathing exercises for stopping the disturbing mind. The mind, by nature, is always oscillating, for it is very fickle. But the breathing exercise is meant to control it. This process of controlling the mind might have been very possible in those days, millions of years ago, when Dhruva Maharaj took to it. But at the present moment, the mind has to be fixed directly on the lotus feet of the Lord by the chanting process. By chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, one immediately concentrates on the sound vibration and thinks of the lotus feet of the Lord. And very quickly one is elevated to the position of samadhi or trance. If one goes on chanting the holy names of the Lord, which are not different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, naturally his mind becomes absorbed in thought of the Lord. It is here recommended to Dhruva Maharaj that he meditate on the Supreme Guru, or Supreme Spiritual Master. The Supreme Spiritual Master is Krishna, who is therefore known as Chaitya Guru. This refers to the Super Soul, who is sitting in everyone's heart. He helps from within, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, and he sends the Spiritual Master, who helps from without. The Spiritual Master is the external manifestation of the Chaitya Guru, or the Spiritual Master sitting in everyone's heart. The process by which we give up our thoughts of material things is called pratyahara, which entails being freed from all material thoughts and engagements. The word abhidyayet, which is used in this verse, indicates that unless one's mind is fixed, one cannot meditate. The conclusion, therefore, is that meditation means thinking of the Lord within. Whether one comes to that stage by the Ashtanga Yoga system, or by the method recommended in the Shastras, especially for this present age, to constantly chant the holy name of the Lord, the goal is to meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Translation. After sitting on your seat, practice the three kinds of breathing exercises, and thus gradually control the life air, the mind, and the senses. Completely free yourself from all material contamination, and with great patience, begin to meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Amagyana Tamarandasya, Giranjana Shalakaya, Chakshara Militam Yena Tasmai, Sri Guru Vena Maha, Sri Chitani Mano Bishram Stapitam Yena Bhutale, Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam, Vanchakalpa Tarubhya Shakripa Sindhu Bhyevacha, Paditanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Pramanujananda, Sri Advaiti Gadadha, Sri Vasati Gaura Bhaktavrinda, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So here, Narada Muni is continuing his instruction about Ashtanga Yoga. As Prabhupada says here, he's more or less summarizing the whole process, the idea being to fix the mind on the Lord gradually, to cultivate that. In the beginning, one's mind is not fixed on the Lord. One's mind is not fixed on anything. One's mind is fixed on many things, roving around the material world, becoming attached to different objects of sense gratification. So, One may take up this process as Narada Muni is advising Dhruva Maharaj. So a person may take up that process, and the end result, or the end goal, is samadhi, to be fixed in trance. The mind is spontaneously attached to the Lord without having to make any effort to concentrate. The mind automatically is concentrated. So one is very nicely absorbed in samadhi. But in the beginning, one's mind is not absorbed at all, but rather one has so many material attachments. So to come to that level of samadhi from that beginning stage, certainly a lot of work is involved. One has to make a great effort, cultivate it very steadfastly, very seriously, go through the different stages, and eventually, when one becomes very advanced, then one should come to this platform of samadhi. Of course, as Prabhupada is pointing out here, this may have been possible for Dhruva Maharaj, but how is it possible today? One cannot do it in a city. One will be trying to meditate, and there'll be so much noise, traffic noise, music, people talking, and the general noise of life on the material platform. So one will have a very hard time fixing the mind, or cultivating fixing the mind. One, of course, and in fact in Bhagavad Gita, yesterday Prabhupada referred to the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where the same subject is being described. So there, in the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna is explaining that if you want to practice this yoga, you have to go away to a very isolated place. Not Hillbrow. Not Chatsworth. Actually, it's very hard to find such a place. But some very, very remote place where there is as little likelihood as possible of you encountering any other living beings who may disturb you. So you should be in a completely remote, isolated place, and then you can sit down and do this practice. But if you do like that, then your mind will tell you after a while that how are you going to manage being on your own like this? You need association. So then the mind will take you back to the city. And in the city, then you'll have your association and you'll feel, oh yes, I'm a little more satisfied. But then you won't be able to do your meditation. So, this process is not very possible. Not recommended. Here, Narada Muni is particularly referring to one particular part of the Ashtanga Yoga process. That is the part called Pranayama. There are different disciplines, apparently, in that process of pranayama, or the breathing exercises. Here he talks about three kinds of pranayama. And by these three kinds of pranayama, you can control different parts of your nature, material nature, the movements of your life here, the movements of your mind, and the movements of your senses. So you do those three types of pranayama. These three parts of your material nature come under control, and then you can focus your mind nicely. So this is a very interesting point, although even it doesn't really relate to us so much. We are not advised to try this. But it is a fact that the condition of the mind is directly related to the movement of air. Directly related. And this is why Prabhupada is saying, special stress is given to the breathing exercises for stopping the disturbing mind. The mind by nature is always oscillating, for it is very fickle. But the breathing exercise is meant to control it. So we might have a hard time understanding how is this, how are these two things related? The mind, breathing, the movement of air. This is because we, unfortunately, are in such a contaminated condition that we cannot see how things are related so much in material life. Krishna makes this point in Bhagavad Gita that the intelligent people or the devotees, they don't take part in the sources of misery which are due to contact with the material senses. So for a devotee may understand this. A devotee should develop an understanding of this. That sense gratification, what is the result? Misery. Now, the devotee may realize this, having become a little purified through execution of devotional service, but those on the material platform, the ordinary person, cannot understand this at all. Actually, he's thinking the opposite. That sense gratification is the source of my happiness. However much happiness I have, it's all coming from sense gratification. So, if I increase my sense gratification, that will equate with increasing my happiness, and that'll be very nice. But actually, Bhagavad Gita is saying that the devotees don't take part in sense gratification because this is the source of misery. And the devotees, through purification, engaging in devotional service, understanding the philosophy, and observing life in this world from the Krishna conscious perspective, they can actually see, oh yes, this sense gratification does not produce happiness, it produces misery. Maybe in the course of arriving at the conclusion of misery, maybe there's a little enjoyment, brief and very minor, very much temporary. But actually it culminates in misery, and that misery is much more substantial than whatever little sense gratification I got before we came to the point of the misery, which is where it all ends up. So the devotee understands this, or the devotee should understand this, then the devotee can become detached, come to the level of nishtha. Nishtha means steadiness or being fixed in Krishna consciousness. So until the devotee has this conviction that actually sense gratification is not a process for getting happiness, but it's simply a process which culminates in misery, until the devotee comes to that realization, it'll be very hard for the devotee to be fixed, always. Rather, as Prabhupada says, there'll be a condition of oscillation. Oscillation, some of you are scientists, aren't you? Doesn't that mean like waves? Is that oscillation? Something like that. Am I right? No scientists here. All great yogis. Anyway, as far as I know, oscillation means wave. Up and down. Up and down. And just, oh, is it sideways? Oh, I see. From one side to another. Yeah. Anyway, I think we've got the idea. Not in one position. Whether it's going around, going from right to left, or going up or down. Up and down.
In connection with a fan.
Yeah. Yeah. The basic idea is not fixed. Moving. Yeah. So unless, or until at least, the devotee comes to this point of being convinced that sense gratification is a process which only increases my misery, then the devotee won't be able to remain fixed. Well, at least until that point. Until that point, the devotee won't be able to remain fixed. So, in devotional service, we have our ways of bringing the mind to this point. Prabhupada here mentions particularly chanting Hare Krishna. However, according to the Ashtanga Yoga process, you don't chant Hare Krishna. You do pranayama, breathing exercises. Because this oscillation of the mind, or flickering nature of the mind, is directly related to the movements of air. And if your air movements are controlled, your mind will be controlled. But if your ear movements are not controlled, then your mind cannot be controlled. It'll follow that same pattern of moving. So the Vedic concept of insanity is life is imbalanced. And the Vedic cure for insanity is balance the life ears. Don't take some pills. Don't just go on a holiday. No, balance the life ears. In fact, in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, one time, Lord Chaitanya, as he was gradually making the transition from externally being more or less like an ordinary person to being the great devotee of the Lord. So as he was going through the transition and gradually he was manifesting devotional symptoms, people were not really aware that he's a great devotee. They were thinking that he's more or less an ordinary person. So he started to manifest at one point what is called the Ashta Sattvika Bhavas. Means the eight main emotional symptoms of bhava. And he appeared insane. He was crying, then he was trembling, then his hairs were standing on end, then his skin was coming up in goosebumps all over, then he was fainting, then he was getting up to his feet and stammering. And so externally the people thought that, they didn't think that, oh, these may be symptoms of bhava. They thought that, oh, our Nimai has lost his mind and he's just going berserk, completely crazy. So finally it culminated in him just collapsing and just remaining fainted on the ground. So they called one Ayurvedic doctor, and what did he prescribe? Not antibiotics or tranquilizers or whatever, something like that, some Valium. But he prescribed breathing exercises. Then, of course, eventually Lord Chaitanya, Sri Srinatai Gaura Hare Ki Jai. So eventually Lord Chaitanya, understanding that the devotees and the people generally were very disturbed by this, he withdrew those ecstatic symptoms and he began again to act like a regular person. So the people thought, oh, those breathing exercises worked. Very good. So this is the traditional Vedic concept, not just traditional Vedic concept, but this is the fact. This is the fact that the movements of your mind are directly related to the movements of your life ears. And if your life ears get imbalanced and there's disturbance in that way, then there will tend to be disturbances in the mind. So of course Ashtanga Yoga means, as we've read here, that one is to come to the point of samadhi, trance, that without making any effort, the mind is simply absorbed in Krishna. So in order to come to that point, certainly one has to get control of the mind. If the mind is going here and there and around and oscillating or whatever, then how are you going to fix the mind? So therefore they do this pranayama. Asana, yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, then pratyahara. Control the senses through the various postures. Control the mind with the breathing exercises. Then begin to fix the mind once you've got control over it. Then begin to fix it. And then it becomes fixed. Then you have to make less and less effort because it's more and more attached to Krishna. And finally it's just fully attached. So our process is not that. that breathing process is very difficult. You could try merging your ingoing, incoming and outgoing breaths and see how long you last. Or you could try suspending your breathing like Dhruva. Breathe once every 6 months. See how you like that. But we're not on that level. We don't have that capacity. Somehow he did, but we don't. So what do we do? Do we give up? Arjuna was saying, I'm going to give up. I'm just going to give up because I can't do it. No, we don't give up. Prabhupada is recommending you chant Hare Krishna. Ashtanga yoga means that before you fix your mind on the Lord, you have to control it. Bhakti yoga means, devotional service means, that whatever your condition, what is that mantra that they chant at initiation? What is it?
Om
apavitra pavitra va sarvavastam gatopi va yasmared pundarikaksham. What is it? Sarva bayantara shuchi. Something like that. So, whether you are apavitra or pavitra, whether you're impure or pure, still yasmared pundarikaksham. Anyone who tries to remember Krishna will basically be delivered. They'll be delivered, whether you're pure or impure. So, of course, we are prone to be impure, but we are given this process of chanting Hare Krishna right from the outset, because this type of meditation, of hearing, chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, is a much more powerful process of meditation than the process of meditation in Ashtanga Yoga. You have to already have controlled your mind in order to begin meditating in Ashtanga Yoga. But in devotional service, you just start your meditation on the Hare Krishna Mantra, and that'll bring your mind under control, and it'll bring everything very quickly, including God realization. But any process of silent meditation, the mind has to be controlled first. Otherwise you try and do the meditation and the mind will be gone. This is why in our process of devotional service, we don't give the Gayatri mantras, or in other words, the process of silent meditation, until a devotee has come to the point of, at least hopefully, controlling the mind through the chanting of Hare Krishna. This chanting of Gayatri mantras, which we do, at least those devotees who are second initiated do, this is similar, this is related to this Krishna. So this is the system. This is the system in devotional service. Not the direct approach, just me and God. Not like that. Actually, it's the mercy of Krishna, the spiritual master within, until the devotee is purified, at least substantially purified. The devotee will not be able to hear the directions of the internal spiritual master very nicely. Sometimes, maybe, but not very nicely. In Bhagavad Gita, in the sixth chapter, Lord Krishna makes the point that when your mind is controlled, he's talking about how your mind can be your friend or your enemy. So when your mind is your friend, when your mind is controlled, then the super soul is already reached. So, if we are listening for direction, Krishna, give me some direction from within. Of course he does sometimes. But if we are thinking that this is the way we get our direction, and other ways we don't worry about so much, but particularly we're interested in getting this direction from within, then, until your mind is controlled, you'll tend to get direction from your mind. One boy, I remember in London, one time, one boy was sitting in class, the class ended, and he disappeared. The devotees were sort of moving around a little bit in the temple room. Suddenly he came back. All he had was a flower. He had nothing else then. Completely naked. And the devotees, he just had one flower. And the devotees, of course, grabbed him and took him away very quickly. They asked him, what's going on? He said, God told me I had to come before him without any, you know, something like artificial coverings or anything, and offer a flower. So until the mind is controlled, the super soul cannot really be reached. Maybe just every now and then the Lord will give some mercy, some instruction to the sincere devotee. But one should not expect that I am going to be directed moment by moment by the super soul until one has come to this point of controlling the mind. But rather one will tend to get direction from the mind. And in this way, one's confused position will just become further complicated. So, by the mercy of Krishna, one gets the spiritual master. And by his direction, one comes to the point, initially at least, of being having a controlled mind. On that level, one may be able to have some more direct communication with Krishna. And culminating ultimately in entering into one's personal direct relationship with Krishna. But this is very advanced. This is very advanced. And even on that level, the external spiritual master is still there. Still there. Very important. So this idea that just me and Krishna. We were at one program in Britz the other day, and we were stressing about sampradaya and the need for direct instruction, personal instruction. And this one man came up and quoted one verse, which I actually can't remember exactly, but the basic idea is that Krishna is my guru. Krishna is Jagat Guru, something like that. So yes, that's a fact. So you're saying, well, can't Krishna be my guru? Because I like Krishna. Well, he can. But Krishna's system is that before he will really manifest as your guru, he sends you the external spiritual master who trains you in devotional service and who remains with you up to the level of perfection and beyond, eternally. But that communication from the super soul, Chaitya Guru, only really manifests when one is on this level of being liberated from material entanglement, particularly the mind. So, this is the process then. Our process is, everything is revolving around chanting the Maha Mantra. Everything. We're worshipping the deity, we're preaching, we are organizing, we're distributing prasad. We're doing so many things. So what is the foundation? Chanting Hare Krishna. Without that, if you take the foundation away, and all the other activities, nice activities, they become, everything becomes very shaky and falls down eventually. Haryanam, Haryanam, Haryanam eva kevalam. Kalo nasteva, 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 gatir anyata. In this age of Kali, there's no other way, no other way, no other way than chanting the holy names, chanting the holy names, chanting the holy names. This is the only way to achieve the goal. So this point that Prabhupada's making is very appropriate. Your control of your mind and your everything, your advancement in Krishna consciousness in all respects, is always related to your chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. So we should be very clear on that point, that we should chant the Hare Krishna mantra very nicely, not just as a chore, that we have an obligation to do so much, and let me fulfill my obligation. Not just that, but one has to actually cultivate chanting Hare Krishna very nicely and giving it one's greatest attention. If one does that, one will advance very quickly and come to this level of having the mind nicely controlled, being very easily absorbed in devotional service. One can come to that level quickly, most quickly. Otherwise, if one doesn't chant like that, if one feels, oh, it's just a chore, I must get it done, then in Chaitanya Charitamrita it states that if you commit offenses while chanting Hare Krishna, then you can go on chanting for hundreds of lifetimes, but you still won't get the fruit of that chanting, love of God. You can go on and on. So we have to take it seriously. We may have a tendency to consider our regular duties, going on sankirtan, cooking, managing, worshipping the deity, we may consider these to be most important, and they're very important. But actually the first duty is chant Hare Krishna. Chant Hare Krishna properly and very nicely. So that should get our first attention. Then everything else can become strong and one can advance. Any comments or questions?
In the question of mind control, this is seen by, commies, especially those opposed to cults, as sinister or something in the producing mindless person. And they tend to use that very much against as evidence for controlling people and groups. So how do we as devotees present a response to that?
Well, first thing is that to control the mind in any situation, be it spiritual life in our case, or material life as in their cases, to be able to have at least reasonable control over the mind is necessary. If you're to execute anything, you have to be able to focus your attention on it. Otherwise, if you're trying to do something which is very complex and requires, a lot of knowledge and great cleverness to do it, great qualification to do it, if you don't focus your mind and give proper attention to getting everything together, if your mind is just off here, there and everywhere, no one will be able to do anything very demanding. Actually, the final manifestation of inability to control the mind at all, if you're to actually not control the mind, but simply let it do as it likes, what does it culminate in? Insanity. Insanity means the mind is simply going as it likes, with no control. And control means the intelligence. Intelligence is directing. So even to do anything in the material world, you have to control your mind, reasonably at least, to focus your attention. So, basically what we are doing is that we are focusing our minds on Krishna, and with our minds focused on Krishna, we're executing our duties. And in doing that, we're not becoming, you know, like less capable of functioning. So we're not going into that state of like mesmerization or something of that sort, losing contact with reality. The devotees are very much in contact with reality, and they're relating with reality nicely. So, but that is based on their minds being fixed on Krishna. So, you know, they would have to show that through the devotees fixing their minds or trying to fix their minds on Krishna, they would have to show that they become less capable of acting. That they actually become like robotic or something like that. But they don't show it. Of course, you can always tell them that I wish I could control my mind. One devotee was being interviewed on TV. He was saying, gosh, you know, my main problem is that I can't control my mind, even though I've been a devotee for some years. And, you know, where are these people who will just act as robots? Perhaps we could get a few, and then they'll just be working all day. But our problem is that the devotees tend to go off here and there. So we don't seem to be achieving the state that you say that we are trying to achieve or that we are meant to be achieving. We don't have any people like that who are just walking around with glazed eyes, just mechanically working from morning to night, and you know, even not sleeping. Where are they? Anyway, you know, if you want to get a university degree, you have to control your mind. You may want to go to all the parties and drink and take drugs and boyfriends and girlfriends and all that. But if you don't control your mind and focus on your work, you won't get your degree. So controlling the mind is necessary. You know, if you say that control of the mind is bad, then, you know, what about people who are scatterbrains? Their minds are definitely not controlled. But scatterbrains are a nuisance. They don't contribute nicely. They're not very nice. So control of the mind, what we're talking of as control of the mind, is not like what they think, but it's a matter of focusing the attention on Krishna and then doing everything with one's mind fixed like that. And when one's mind is fixed like that, one can do things very nicely and be very clear-headed and a very reasonable person. Those are some ideas. Well, you probably know that Prabhupada, when they were accusing us initially about 20 years ago of brainwashing, he said, what brainwashing? You have no brain. We're trying to give you a brain. Then he said that, yes, we want to wash your brain, because your brain is very dirty. It needs to be washed. So this, of course, is just playing on words. Some other comments or questions? Yeah?
Well, you just said that the first thing, or the first thing to perform the chanting.
Yes.
And was, you know, first time, like, there was someone who was giving a lecture, then after that, after the lecture went out, then he saw some devotees were chanting. And then the following day, he gave a class also on that, that the first process is Shravana, is here. No one who brings their questions to chant, they must come, and they must attend the class.
Oh, yes. Of course. The first process is chanting Hare Krishna. That's what everything is based on. It's the only way. If you don't chant the holy names, it won't work. So, but still, Prabhupada made it very clear that if you have duties, then, which require that something is done at a particular time, then you must do it. Doesn't mean you must not chant your rounds. doesn't mean that you must say that, oh, I have to chant my round, so let us reschedule this thing which is meant to be at a fixed time. But, you know, we must do our duties in a responsible way. But at the same time, it's a fact that chanting 16 rounds is the first duty of the devotee. Yeah, it's the first thing. What are our regulative principles? The four do nots, and then the one which is stressed is you chant 16 rounds. These are the vows people take when they're initiated. They may also take some other vow that I'll chant, I'll read, and so on and so forth. But that's always a little flexible. But they must take the rounds, the vows. Four regulative principles, chanting 16 rounds. But it's not that we then become impractical about the practical service that also needs to be rendered. Prabhupada, when they first opened the Krishna Balaram temple in 1974 and 5, then Prabhupada spent some weeks there trying to get the organization of it together. So he would go around with the temple president every morning and point out faults. So at one point Prabhupada was saying that, oh, there's so many problems here. What are we going to do? The temple president said, Srila Prabhupada, we will chant Hare Krishna. Prabhupada said, an impractical suggestion. So that doesn't mean that Prabhupada was saying that getting the temple together is actually more important than your chanting Hare Krishna. Actually, the chanting of Hare Krishna is more important, but still the practicalities of the service of spreading Krishna consciousness can't be overlooked just with the idea that I must chant Hare Krishna. Of course, if one's duties build up and one doesn't have time to chant Hare Krishna, then that's also very bad. But, you know, whatever time of the day one chants one's rounds, one should realize that now I am doing actually really what is the most important thing. I'm chanting Hare Krishna. So let me give it my very best effort.
During days of the Pakistan, because he was an acharya who emphasized preaching, but yet he got his disciples to chant 64 rounds. So how they were able to achieve both?
I don't know if they did.
Because
I don't know how it all worked in the Gaudiya Math.
They were preaching mission, establishing 64 rounds and maintaining. Yeah. So
I don't know if they all were doing that, actually.
Because when Srila Prabhupada started this concept,
he started with that.
He chant 64, then he brought down to 32, and he said, well, not less than 16.
Yeah.
So I always wondered how they were managed to achieve both.
I don't know. But judging by what some of them say, it appears that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta may not have stressed it, because they're not stressing it. You won't find one who stresses it amongst Prabhupada's godbrothers or their followers. You won't find a single one. But in ISKCON, everyone knows you must chant 16 rounds.
Well, they've come down to four.
Well, they've come down to four. But, so therefore, you know, it makes one wonder, how much did Srila Bhaktisiddhanta stress 64? Even though the fact is there, I think it's Raghunath Das Goswami says, there's one verse, that if you chant less than one lakh of names, then you are beneath the human platform. Well, yes, he said it, but he was repeating the verse by Raghunath Das Goswami. So, but then Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he said at least four. If your other duties are so much. And he said at least four. Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Yeah. But, anyway, fortunately, so anyway, like I say, I don't know how much Srila Bhaktisiddhanta stressed 64, because his followers don't seem to have come out of it all fixed in the idea, like Prabhupada's followers are. They're fixed in the idea then you must chant 16 rounds, isn't it? Everyone knows that without fail. So, I don't know whether he stressed it but then they just forgot it, or whether he didn't stress it so much. But Prabhupada, he was aware of what our needs are. Therefore, he really stressed this minimum of 16 rounds. Yes?
Hey, Maharaj, say now, I've been here for 2 days, and you know, I fully agree with what you have been saying about, you know, chanting. And I feel much relieved, you know, spiritually and in mind. The problem is, I've got two questions. The first one is, if I'm out of this premises, the temple, you find that there is not even a chance to recite, to chant, because we've got many things to attend to.
I see.
So the question is, how then am I going to manage outside?
Yeah.
Secondly, this, you know, I really like to chant silently, but how to achieve that?
Okay. Well, now, there are many people, actually, who are devotees, and they're very committed to Krishna consciousness, and they're upholding all the standards. There are many. But due to family responsibilities in most cases, and or whatever, but generally family responsibilities, they're not able to live in a temple. They have to live outside in a house or a flat and maintain the family by working. But even though, as you say, there are so many responsibilities and things that we may have to do, but what they have done is they have worked out their program of activities in their lives in such a way that they definitely have time set aside for chanting and reading and associating with the devotees. Yes, they're not just working from morning to night. And they're not wasting their time. They work probably 8 hours a day. But then there's so much more time. You only need to sleep 6 hours a night or so. Not more than seven is definitely not required. So you add that with 8 hours of work. That's 15. A little, an hour or so for traveling, 16. Then there's still 8 hours. There's still 8 hours. So, if one is serious, one will realize, I've got these 8 hours, some time in the morning, some time in the evening. So let me now utilize this time for my chanting and reading, visiting the temple like that. Yeah, so there are many people who are doing like that. We don't live to work. One works to live. So one shouldn't just get caught up with so many entanglements. One should try to just do the minimum to maintain body and soul together in a proper way, and then in the balance of the time execute Krishna consciousness. So, just like our Rasa Raj Prabhu here, he is a big accountant, right? For the Tongat City Council, is it, or something? Yes, so he's a working man and a married man. But he's every day chanting 16 rounds and doing so much service, actually. So it's not that it can't be done. It's just one has to use one's discretion to avoid getting involved in unnecessary things. You know, you need some employment, so get some decent employment which will allow you to earn enough.